You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
It's 9 a.m. in Chicago on a Friday morning. This is the Catholic Community of Faith. I'm Graziano Marcheschi, welcoming you and thanking you for spending this part of your morning with us. I'm flying solo today. Father Greg Sackowitz, our anchor, is celebrating a funeral this morning, so we keep him in our prayers, and especially the family who are grieving, to whom he will be ministering during this funeral. We have some exciting topics today, two very different topics. We're going to be going from immigration in the first half to talking about 13th century music in the second half. But we're a very eclectic church. We have a big umbrella, and we all fit under it. I want to welcome to the program this morning Elena Segura, who is the director of the Office for Immigrant Affairs. She's sitting right here in the studio in front of me. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Quintilio Rios, a student and parishioner at Holy Cross Parish, who participated in a speaker's training offered by our Office of Immigration Affairs. And on the phone, we have Mr. Kevin Appleby, who is the policy director of the USCCB, that's the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, in charge of the Migration and Refugee Services Department. He is the one who coordinates all the bishops' initiatives for immigration reform and the DREAM Act. The USCCB Justice for Immigration is participating in an interfaith initiative called DREAM Sabbath. Dozens of dioceses are developing educational activities to create awareness on the realities of undocumented students. This initiative goes from September 25th to October 9th, so we're getting near the end of that educational focus period. And we're very grateful for all of our guests. Welcome to all of you.
Oh, thank you.
Quinto, you made it.
Yes, I made it. Thank you for the invitation, and thank you to the Catholic Church.
Yes.
Yes, I'm glad to be helping out here as far as testimonials.
And Kevin, you're with us on the phone.
Yes, I am.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Kevin, why don't we start with you and tell us a little bit about the origins of this Dream Sabbath concept.
Well, as some of the listeners might know, the Dream Act has been in circulation in Congress for the last 10 years. Senator Durbin, of course, is the main sponsor and the main advocate for the DREAM Act, and we came really close in December to getting it over the finish line, fell 5 votes short in the Senate of getting the bill passed. We needed 60 for cloture, and we got 55, so we were very close. So we regrouped and thought, well, we really need to raise more awareness about this issue and about the plight of many of these students.
Let me just stop you for a second. Why don't you just refresh our memories on what the dimensions of this act are?
Well, what the DREAM Act would do is it would take a group of young people who came with their parents when they were young, and the age range differs depending on when they came, and they're out of status, they're undocumented, but they came to this country, you know, with their parents, as we all would if we were children. So they didn't come on their own volition. What the bill would do, it would provide them the opportunity to learn in-state, earn legalization and citizenship if they either participate in the military for 2 years or in higher education for 2 years. And then they would earn their green card and eventual citizenship. Also would provide them, would remove a provision in law that would penalize states that do provide in-state tuition for undocumented students. So it sort of helps on the tuition side and helps on the legalization side.
So it's a path to citizenship, and it provides some financial assistance by qualifying them for in-state tuition.
Yes.
And we know that the USCCB is strongly behind this act, as is Cardinal Francis George here in Chicago.
Yes, we think that first of all, it addresses the rule of law issue because these kids, you know, they came with their parents. They didn't come on their own decision. They're bright young people that we need to invest in because they're going to give back to the country threefold or more than what we provide them. So I think it's a win-win, not only for the students, but for the country.
All right. I want to ask you in a minute, you know, some of the reasons why it fell five votes short, why there's opposition to this act. But before we do that, Elena, tell us a little bit on the human front. You run our immigration office. I'm sure you've dealt one-on-one with a lot of people who are in this situation. Give us a sense of what that plight is, what it's like to be someone who was brought here, had no participation in the decision to come to this country, has grown up here, and now is facing some of the realities that someone who's undocumented is going to have to face?
That's a great question, Graziano. And that's the reason why we have somebody who can speak directly in a first-hand experience. Here's Quinti, who can share his story. And Quinti's story is very similar than the hundreds and thousands of people in this archdiocese, in the whole country. So we can listen to him.
All right, Quinti, you're on. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Thank you. Sure. First of all, thank you for the invitation. I'm really glad to be here and be able to share my story on behalf of many who have different stories and who haven't able to succeed as much or having able to have the opportunities that I had. Really briefly, what my story is that I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for something that happened in my family. My dad was a policeman in Mexico City, and he was providing for the family. He was doing well until he became a victim of the crime he intended to fight. So that left my father passed away, and my mother had to find a way to just provide for our family, for my brother and I. And she did it for a while. She used to work as a domestic worker in Mexico City for really wealthy families. But she also faced discrimination because we are from indigenous origin. And there's a lot of prejudice against indigenous peoples in Mexico too. It ended up that the only solution that she found, her savings were running out, the mortgage... just the payment of the house property in Mexico was also a burden on the family. So she didn't find another solution but to bring us here to the U.S. I think that if she would have been more informed, maybe she would have found other ways, although it's very limited to come to the U.S. Legally. As many say that, why don't they find like a legal way to come here? Well, basically, if you don't have a business, if you're not opening a business in the U.S., then it's really, really difficult for you to come to the U.S.
How old were you and your siblings when you came?
I was about 10 years old, and I didn't know what's going on. I didn't want to separate from my family, so I just went along. I just didn't know what was going on. I don't remember how I came here. I just know that I grew up here in the U.S. It was hard for me to learn the language, but I really wanted to. I really wanted to know what people said. I really wanted to hear the news and actually understand what's going on. I grew up here. I went to the Chicago public schools, really supportive. There's a lot of more support for education there as compared to Mexico City. And from then, I just started working on my English. I started just working on my grades, and there's also a little discrimination here as far as like bilingual education. Basically, my grades, my A's and my B's didn't count as much as if you were just in English language classes. So I took the challenge. I wanted to succeed here. So I took the challenge, took English-only classes. During high school, I had to bother my counselor because he kept me on the bilingual program. Here in Illinois, by law, if you took 3 years of bilingual, you need to go into English-only classes. And I already had 3 years in the bilingual program. So I had to bother my counselor so I could actually go into English classes. I took the challenge. It was hard to... I did understand. It's just hard to speak the language. And basically, after that, I worked really hard, earned recommendations. Every year, from sophomore, junior, and senior year, I was recommended for higher level programs. Sophomore year in high school, I went to honors programs. From junior and senior year, I took IB classes and AP classes, which is advanced placement and basically college-ready curriculum. And just to find out that during my junior and senior year, I didn't feel what being undocumented was until when I wanted to go to college. Not because a lot of people think that, you know, oh, because they want financial aid. Just because I want to go to college and the application needs a social security number. So I found out that I didn't have that, and it was
challenging.
Had
you been aware during your time in high school that you were going to face this challenge if you chose to go to college?
I did have a sense about it. I didn't know what it meant. I really found out what it meant once I had to actually fill out the applications and actually come up with the money, which I have worked really hard as far as like doing a lot of stuff. And it's just, you just get a sense of what it is, but you don't know what it is until you go through it.
Mm-hmm. All right, we need to take a quick break. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Kinti. We're going to pick up on that when we return. A few brief messages, and then we'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through, Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, "You know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in?" And she gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, "Is this something you can do?" And I looked at her and says, "You're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now. And I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head."
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298. Or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith. Windy morning in Chicago. Driving down Lakeshore Drive, I saw these huge white caps and waves crashing against the shore there. It was amazing. It was beautiful. The power of nature, the power of God. So we're glad that it's Friday, but we're always glad it's whatever day it is because God's in our hearts and God's ruling this world despite some of the difficulties and despite some of the evidence to the contrary. We're talking about a very important topic this morning about immigration and particularly about efforts on the part of the United States Catholic Conference to help pass the DREAM Act, which is an act that would allow young people who were brought here to this country through no fault of their own by their parents when they were 2, 3, 4, 8, 10 years old and grew up here, attended school here, and who now want to go to university here. Under current law, they can't because they don't have a Social Security number. This law would not only allow them to, would not only provide them a path towards citizenship, would also qualify them for the in-state tuition rate of whatever state they live in. So we're speaking with Elena Segura, the director of our Office for Immigration Affairs, Quintiliano Rios, who's a student who has participated in speakers training on this issue, with Kevin Appleby from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, who heads up the Migration and Refugee Service Department. And we want to welcome to the program Dr. Michael J. Hogan, the president of the University of Illinois. Dr. Hogan, along with Father Dennis Holtschneider, who is the president of DePaul University, have been working to support the plight of undocumented immigrants in their universities. Welcome, Dr. Hogan.
Thank you, Gratz. It's great to be with you.
Let's start with you, Doctor. Tell us what your involvement is with this issue and how you experience it from the university side.
Well, I've been fairly active on the issue, both supporting Senator Durbin, and by the way, thanks to him, mm-hmm. who sort of led this effort on the national stage, but supporting his effort and that of others in Washington to get a National DREAM Act through. But also there are things going on in Illinois where we've worked very hard to get sort of an Illinois version of the DREAM Act through the legislature this past session, and good part because of the leadership of people like Senate President Cullerton and Speaker of the House of Representatives Madigan and so on. They worked very, very hard. We all worked very hard along with Father Dennis mm-hmm. in a series of rallies and student-focused events to begin mobilizing sufficient popular and then legislative support to get it through.
Tell us a little bit about undocumented immigrant students within the universities. Are students able to enter? Do they do so through some backdoor means? How does that happen?
No, they're able to register and enroll. They often keep their undocumented status to themselves for various reasons, mainly for fear of arrest. But they are able to enroll. They've organized, with the help of others, their own organization to advocate for the DREAM Act and other kinds of changes. Till recently, they haven't been able to qualify for much in the way of financial support to get them through. And, of course, the big battle ahead is once they do get through and take a degree, what happens to them then, what happens to their job status and so on when they go into the labor market. But we have, you know, Illinois, especially here on the Urbana campus, is a very competitive admission school. So I know for sure when I'm talking to an undocumented student here, a DREAM student, that they're a very highly qualified student. They wouldn't be here if they weren't highly qualified. And I think students like that deserve a chance, particularly when they've been brought here two or three or four, you said earlier. They spent their entire life here. Their community is here. Their friends are here. I think they have they deserve a chance to get through college here and to make their own contribution to the betterment of society, American society, and global society.
Let's go back to Kevin. So, given what Dr. Hogan just described, when we were off the air, we were speaking with Quintiliano, and he gave us some additional details. His father was killed in the line of duty. There were threats against the entire family. His mother's fleeing to the United States wasn't just for economic reasons, it was for safety reasons. So here's a young man who grew up here. He's lived in the state of Illinois. He'd like to qualify for in-state tuition. Apparently, he could go to school. I guess I was mistaken that an undocumented student can apply for university and be admitted, but they can't get that in-state tuition. So, Kevin, why has this law not been able to be enacted? What's the resistance?
Well, there's lots of reasons. As you know, Gratz, this issue is very divisive in the country, especially at a time of a down economy. So there's just strong opposition to any sort of act that would provide legal status to immigrants who are undocumented, regardless of their situation, first of all. Opponents make the argument, for example, that this will create a magnet for future parents, if you will, to bring their kids to the states in hopes that they'll be able to qualify for the DREAM Act. Now, of course, there's a cutoff, of course, in the bill, so prospective future wouldn't qualify. But they make the argument anyway that this is going to create a magnet.
Okay, now that's a very important issue because I bet most people don't know that.
Don't know that there's a cutoff?
That there's a cutoff because the whole magnet argument disappears once you say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's true. And you know, it's not, you know, they want to make sure that they capture everyone that's certainly during this period that's come in. But then they would cut it off after that. So, I mean, that does take away the argument. However, it's still
it still is an argument that's made, because oftentimes there's disinformation out there. There are notarios that say, oh, look what they did, let me help you get to the States, and, you know, so there's a lot of misinformation. Same thing with the thing such as temporary protected status, which is a piece in law where nationals can get legal status because of a natural disaster in their country, but for people coming after the date, they're not going to qualify.
Yeah. I know that sometimes young people face deportation possibility. I know there was a young man in my own parish who attended our grade school throughout the 8 years of grade school. And then in the middle of high school, he was facing the threat of deportation. I don't remember what the particulars were, if his parents had somehow been discovered, but there was a huge effort on the part of the parish to try to save this young man and keep him from being sent back to Mexico when he had spent almost his entire life here. How does that come about? How is it possible that a young person would suddenly be faced with the possibility of deportation? Elena, have you experienced that at all?
Well, we have some cases we have definitely cases like them. These people might have come with their, you know, who overstayed their visa and their study, and they had some, they had to present themselves to ICE, and they weren't able to. And now, because of secure communities, and also it's more complicated, so people are in that process of deportation. And we have a lot of cases like that in our own parishes. So we're trying to create consciousness of this reality. And we had a very interesting case in Chicago from the University of Illinois. I think it was that Dr. Hogan. Rigo a case from University of Illinois? You were very strong supporter of his release. That was a very unique case.
Not unusual for undocumented students who sort of go public on behalf of the cause, mm-hmm. and participate in demonstrations and so on for the DREAM Act. If there's, you know, even a violation of jaywalking rules or something like that, and they get arrested for it, mm-hmm. they face the threat of deportation because they're one, undocumented, and two, they mm-hmm. broke the law. So it's really quite an act of courage, I think, for some of these young students to kind of lay their own future on the line on behalf of this cause by participating in demonstrations that might lead to their own arrest and then eventually their deportation.
And then we need to take a quick break. We'll come back and continue our conversation. We'd love to hear from you out there. We know that this is sometimes a controversial topic, so if you'd like to weigh in, give us a call at 312-255-8408, 312-255-8408. A few messages, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
I'm Margie Mansko-Breen of the Respect Life office, inviting you to the 9th annual Educating Minds, Inspiring Hearts dinner to benefit the wonderful work of our Chastity Education Initiative. Join Cardinal Francis George on Sunday, October 16th at the Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace. Our guest speaker is former fashion model Leah Darrow, who will share her courageous story of rediscovering her Catholic faith. For more information and to register for the event, go to respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355. That's 312-534-5355 or visit respectlifechicago.org.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at catholicnewworld.com. view our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back to Catholic Community Faith. Graziano Marcheschi, welcome you back. I'm an immigrant sitting here talking to two other immigrants about the issue of immigration. We have John calling from his car, and he'd like to make a point about what's balanced and not balanced on this issue. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I just wanted to make the point that I feel like that we're just taking one side of the story, and I think that everyone on this program, till me calling, is basically assuming that this is the ethical and the morally correct procedure to take. And I disagree. I think it's misapplied to, it's misplaced compassion, forgive me, but I believe it's misplaced for compassion to side only with those who are here. And we're using the word undocumented, but the problem is not so much that they're just missing their documents. It's that they don't have documents because they're not supposed to be here. And I think there's a element of breaking the law that these people undertake when they come here. And in a time when we have so many economic problems for those who live and are born here in this country, who are trying also to get into these types of universities. And I know that the one fellow said that, well, you know, there's some very qualified people. Well, there's qualified people that would be turned away who were born here and have paid their taxes and are legal residents here who would be turned away under these circumstances.
Well, John, we're grateful that you called and presented that side, because I'm sure you're not alone, and there are many people who feel that, and it's not an unreasonable position.
I would say a strong majority would support that, but I'm sorry for interrupting.
That's okay. That's okay. I mentioned I'm an immigrant. I came, you know, quotes, legally. Actually, my coming here was delayed by 2 years because the immigration quotas were changed. So my father and oldest brother came. My mother and other brother and I were to follow a month or two later, and it wound up taking 2 years before we were able to come. So I understand it from that side. Does it make a difference to you, John, that we're talking about children who didn't make that decision to break the law, who were brought here and have grown up here, and now they're in this situation through no fault of their own?
Well, of course it does, and I just believe, though, that's, you know, the one fellow mentioned that, well, this would be, there's a cutoff point, and yet today there's a cutoff point. 20 years ago there was a cutoff point for amnesty, and they're back doing the same thing again. There would be a cutoff date today, but they'll be coming back in 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 years, and while we understand that there are children that have no, you know, that was not their decision, and they're put in a position, and it certainly is something that we can all have compassion for, and I truly do, but I also feel that, what about the compassion about those, specifically those kids that will not be allowed to go to certain universities because these individuals will be taking their spot? What's more fair, to give the person who was born here and who paid taxes and is a legal resident and who whose family played by the rules, and give them, to tell them no, and tell these people?
Okay, John, let's let Kevin okay. respond. John is making some points here. What would be your take on these, Kevin?
Well, I think the doctor would be better situated to answer the whether other students are being denied or not.
Well, they would clearly be denied because there's only certain number of.
Okay, Kevin, let's give the folks a chance to respond. You've made some valid points. Now let's hear the other side again.
Well,
Dr. Hogan,
go ahead.
Well, first, I think I'd say that we don't know they're undocumented when they apply here. They apply, they're admitted. We often don't know until they're about to graduate, and sometimes we never know whether they were undocumented during the course of their career here. And it is true, of course, that there are always capacity issues at this university or any university. So to some extent, it's absolutely true of these students, qualified as they may, get in the door. That's one student that doesn't get in the door, not to college, but to this particular college. So you have to make the argument on other grounds that these are young people brought here at a very early age through no fault of their own. They had no consent in the matter. They spent their entire life here. They've gone all the way through public schools or private schools or wherever they went. They prepared for college. They applied to college. They were admitted to college on the merits. And once they get out of college, they go into the workforce, they'll make a very substantial, we hope, a very substantial contribution to American life. For all practical purposes, we're talking about students who are American.
Yeah, thank you.
Grown up in an American culture, who feel themselves as American, whose identity is largely American. We're talking about people who were caught in the middle of something they didn't create.
Quintia, you've lived this experience, and I'm sure that you've heard these arguments before. What's your response?
Well, I think that John has a really valid point. I remember from his perspective, I remember talking to Father Gary, who's a priest in one of the local churches, and he did tell me that. He did tell me, well, you know, sometimes the immigration movement, pro-immigration movement, it's going demanding, but they don't actually stop and say, look, I know we broke a law. I know that, you know, we had to do it for some reasons. Like, my family wouldn't have come to the U.S. if it wasn't for the threat that they faced in Mexico, because my dad was a policeman. So, so I understand that perspective, and I really respect that. And I also think that, you know, there's some circumstances that are really complex as far as just putting it off as, you know, just like they want papers and they just being a burden. A lot of us do pay taxes as far as like with an IT number. And also one last point I wanted to make was that I, as undocumented students or as people from the other side call it illegal immigrants, is that most of us, if you get to know us, are going to tell you that that we don't want free money. We just want a chance to work, or we just want a chance to actually provide a certification, provide some kind of ID. We're not asking for free money.
Well said. Before we go, we're over time. Elena, tell us, Dream Sabbath, anything particular coming up here within the Archdiocese of Chicago that we ought to be aware of?
Yes, we are participating in the Dream Sabbath to create more awareness about this complex issue. We see as a church, we welcome the stranger. We welcome people who are here who came to this country as our brothers and sisters. And we have this is an interfaith campaign, the Dream Sabbath, and the Archdiocese of Chicago is participating with having speakers, people like Quinty in various parishes. We have over 50 parishes in the Archdiocese who are praying for undocumented immigrants who are participating with, who are reading more stories and also bulletin inserts. The Cardinal has a statement of supporting the Dream Act and the students.
Which can be found on the Archdiocesan website.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we need to end this segment of the program. I want to thank all of our guests this morning. Dr. Michael Hogan, the President of the University of Illinois, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Kevin Appleby, Policy Director of the USCCB Migration Refugee Office. Quintiliano Rios, our caller, John, and Elena Segura, the Director of our Office for Immigration. It's an important issue. We all need to keep thinking and praying about it and open our hearts to the Holy Spirit. God bless you all. After a few messages, we'll come back and talk about a very different topic, music from the 13th century coming right here to the 21st. We'll be right back.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
If you haven't read The Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is written by our publisher, Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities throughout Cook and Lake Counties.
Are you constantly on the go? Then stay connected to your church by visiting CatholicNewWorld.com and sign up to follow us on Twitter.
That's CatholicNewWorld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and if you haven't already, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777.
Your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World. You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
And thank you for staying with us for this second half of Catholic Community of Faith. I'm Graziano Marcheschi, welcoming you back. That music you're hearing is music from the 13th century?
Well, the melody actually probably comes more from the 17th or 18th century, a Russian choral melody from a hymn after communion in the Byzantine church.
And the voice you just heard is the voice of Timothy Woods, who is our guest for this next half hour. He is a conductor and will have some upcoming concerts featuring Byzantine music at St. John Cantius Parish, Annunciation Parish in Homer Glen, and at Rockefeller Chapel at the University of Chicago. He's also reviving the Musicam Sacram Choir under the new name of Ecclesia. Welcome to the show, Timothy.
Thank you, Gratz. Good to be here.
Timothy is a deacon, or is ordained a lector on his way to becoming a deacon in the Byzantine Church. He sits before me in a floor-length black robe, looking kind of monastic.
Well, it's a cassock. It's the traditional garb for those who have accepted minor orders, such as being a lector or subdeacon. Or deacon, for that matter. Even priests wear them.
All right. Very good. Well, tell us a little bit more about yourself. What's your background? How did you come to your interest in this music?
Well, very briefly, my father was also a music director and teacher. My mother also sang, so my training started from an early age. I got a bachelor's degree in music education from Ball State University and the master's degree in conducting from Northwestern. Because my father was a church music director in the Roman church, I always gravitated toward the beauty of God's liturgy in the Roman church. And then about 10 years ago, with the help of a priest from the Diocese of Peoria, Father John Thirion, I found out about the Byzantine Catholic Church, the eastern lung of the Catholic Church.
the Eastern Lung. So is this a Byzantine church that's in union with Rome, or is this the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we are in communion with Rome, as are many other Eastern Catholic churches.
Absolutely. And that's why John Paul II used that term, that the church breathes with two lungs, the Roman and the Byzantine and the Eastern.
Right. It is encyclical. Orientale Lumen, I believe it was.
Very good. So your interest then in church and church music dates to your father's involvement. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree here.
No, it comes from my life, the way I was raised, the way it was the gift I was given in my faith in God and the Catholic Church.
All right. Well, we have a piece of music that we're going to listen to. Why don't you give us a little bit of a setup, and then we'll take a moment or two to listen up.
Well, I hope the one they have set up... is a piece called To Thy Patronage. It is also from the Russian tradition. It's very appropriate today because tomorrow on the Byzantine calendar is the Feast of the Protection of Our Lady. The short story is there was a church in Constantinople. The town was being besieged by an enemy, or there was a plague, and the people went to this church for refuge. And while they were praying, Mary appeared to them and spread her mantle above them as a sign of her protection. And indeed, the city was protected from the plague or the attack, whichever it has.
And your involvement with the piece of music that we're going to hear?
I just sort of clarified the arrangement here. This arrangement was done before me, but I just clarified it somewhat. And it's being sung by the Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church under my direction.
Under your direction.
Well, actually, the Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Men's Choir, to be specific.
All right. So get that cup of coffee, throw in a little sugar, and listen up to this beautiful music. That was beautiful, powerful music. You know, I'm a fan of contemporary church music, the hymns that we sing. But when I hear something like that, I understand why sometimes people characterize contemporary music as kind of elevator music by comparison. This is very powerful. I mean, it really conveys the sacred without any effort whatsoever.
Yes, yes, Gratz, it does. It also conveys that the feast itself, you know, this is perhaps how these people were feeling before Mary appeared to them, when they're imploring God for mercy to deliver them from their enemy.
And all voices, no music.
In the Byzantine church, traditionally, we have no voices. It was also like that in the Roman church until about maybe the 10th or 11th century. There was only the voice was the only instrument used to worship God.
It's very powerful, but it must take a great deal of effort for a conductor to get the voices to blend so beautifully.
Well, it also takes great dedication from the choir. The Ecclesia choir, which is going to be singing these concerts that you referred to, is a mostly volunteer choir. We do have some professionals in the choir to help us out, but it's mostly volunteer, and they rehearse on Sunday evenings, I should say, at Divine Infant Parish in Westchester is where we rehearse, and it is by audition, so it's a great deal of effort on the choir members as well.
How many voices were we hearing just now?
In the men's choir, you know, I would have to recollect that I think maybe 14 to 16 voices. But it was in Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, which is a wonderful space, and that's where our second concert will take place on November 13th.
Yeah, if it was only 14 voices, then that was very amazing, because I would have guessed 40 or 50.
It does sound like that in a church with wonderful acoustics.
Yeah, well, that's powerful. So what attracts these men? I mean, a men's choir is very impressive because, you know, most churches I go to, if there's a choir standing up there, it's probably 80% women and, you know, lucky if you got 20, 15, 10% men.
Right.
What attracts these men to put out all this effort to do this very disciplined work of learning this old music?
Well, just to clarify, the Ecclesia choir sometimes is a men's choir, sometimes it's a mixed choir. For these concerts of the Byzantine Requiem, it will be a mixed choir, about 50-50 women and men. But to answer your question, I personally believe, being a man, that one of the things that attracts men to this music is, as you said before, the profundity and the gravitas of this music, which calls us to a deeper, profound understanding of who God is.
Well, that's a wonderful perspective, and I don't question that that's absolutely right, because I think, you know, just like the Marines say, you know, we only want a few good men, if you can handle it, that men are very much attracted to things that are of great quality, of depth, and that will take, they're willing to put out the effort if they see that there's a payoff at the end.
Yes, I think women are also attracted to such things as quality.
Oh, but well, we already know that. See, that's a given. It's men I'm worried about.
It's the men you're worried about.
It's the men I'm worried about. We know the women get attracted to that.
Fear not.
There's something about the female psyche that just connects better with things of substance, but we men sometimes don't get the important stuff. And we need something to lure us in.
Well, perhaps that's what attracted me to the Byzantine Church, because I was Roman Catholic for 40 years. And then when I came to Annunciation Church as an example, there were many beautiful Byzantine churches, but as an example for that one, I came to that church thinking I would just visit for a week and then find a Roman church that I desired. But I went and I never left, because I think I was one of those men who saw something I hadn't experienced before.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break and then come back and hear some more music and discuss the upcoming concerts of this powerful music from the Eastern Church. Don't go away.
This year, on November 26th and 27th, the Catholic Church all over the United States will begin celebrating the Mass using the English translation of the third edition of the Roman Missal. In much of the prayers, responses, and acclamations, this English translation will no doubt sound a bit different from what we're currently used to in the Mass. The question is, are you ready for these new words? The Office for Divine Worship invites you to a two-hour session of information and reflection, Praying the New Missal Texts, a workshop for all Catholics. There are several sessions scheduled through early November. For dates, times, and locations of the remaining workshops, go to www.odw.org or call 312-534-5153. Don't miss this opportunity for exploring the English translation of the third edition of the Roman Missal. Go to www.odw.org or call 312-534-5153.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
During the next half hour, we'll take you to World Youth Day in Madrid, where 1.5 million young adult Catholics from around the globe gathered in prayer and celebration with the Holy Father. We'll attend a multi-faith 9/11 memorial service 10 years after that fateful day. And we'll visit with the man who heads our vocations office and find out what he's doing to foster vocations within the Archdiocese.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You. Compelling television about your archdiocese.
I bet if you knew that you were going to hear that at church on Sunday, you'd pack the kids in the car early and just head there to make sure you got a good seat. Tim, tell us about this music we're hearing.
This is the Kyrie from Mozart's Sparrow Mass, being sung by the Musicum Sacrum Choir. It's from our archives. It's actually going to be on our new Christmas CD, which we're releasing and will be sold at these concerts we're doing in November. This choir, the Ecclesia Choir, and the Musicum Sacrum Choir as well, is dedicated to being an ambassador of goodwill to both the East and the Western Church. We would like to serve in both Roman churches, Byzantine Catholic churches, and also Orthodox churches where they would invite us. But this music itself is from a Mozart Mass called the Sparrow Mass, because in the Sanctus, there's a little chirping sound. It sounds like birds.
Well, it's absolutely gorgeous, and with this music, with this piece, we obviously heard some music. I could detect horns and violins. Tell me, in the Eastern Church, is there any vocal participation by the assembly?
Absolutely. In the Eastern Church, I think actually in the Vatican II, where they come up with the phrase active participation in the liturgy, I personally think that our fathers of our church in the Vatican II got that experience from the Eastern Church, because when you go to a Byzantine Catholic church, the people sing almost 100% of their parts of the music. Of course, there are parts for the priest to sing and parts for the deacon gets a lot of work. A deacon in the Eastern Church earns his keep because he has a lot to sing, and so do the people. And the choir's role is both one of supportive for the congregation and also for meditation. There are some pieces the choir does sing by itself from time to time, but primarily it's the chant of the people, what we call the prostopinia in the Slavic church, the chant of the people, the peasants' chant, to be quite honest about it.
So is that invariable music? Is that basically you learn a repertoire and that's what's used on a consistent basis, or does it change?
Well, it's just like in the Roman church, where you have the ordinary, which doesn't change pretty much from liturgy to liturgy, and there are propers depending on the feast day. For example, for this feast we have tomorrow of the Protection of Mary, we'll have a different, what they call chopar or kantakion, which are hymns before the readings. We'll have perhaps an innermost, which is a special chant from Matins, which is inserted into the liturgy, which is usually a prayer to Mary. So we have ordinary and propers just like the Roman Church does.
All right, tell us about these concerts that you have coming up, where they're going to be, the kind of music that you'll be singing, and whether or not there's a cost involved.
Yes. We do ask for a donation, and you can find out about that by going to our website, if I can mention that.
Oh, please do.
The website is Lincoln Chamber Productions, with an S, lincolnchamberproductions.org. And the phone number, if I can give that
please.
Out, if anyone wants to take that, is 815-806-0066. You can call for tickets there as well as the webpage.
Well, let's do that phone number one more time.
815-806-0066.
And once more with the website.
Lincoln Chamber Productions, because that's kind of the umbrella that Ecclesia is under. Lincoln Chamber Productions with an S .org. You can find us there. But the music itself is the Byzantine funeral rite from the Ruthenian declension, which is basically the part of the world, southern Poland, eastern Slovakia, western Ukraine. The people from that part of the Subcarpathian region would probably refer to themselves not as Polish or Slovakians or Ukrainians. They would refer to themselves as Ruthenians.
Mm.
And so it's the melodies from this rite that I spent the last 3 years harmonizing myself. And so that's what we'll be singing. The dates are the first three Sundays of November, November 6th, 13th, and 20th. As you said before, the first one's at St. John Cantius, a tremendous church in the Roman tradition here in Chicago. The 13th is at Annunciation in Homer Glen, and the third concert is at the Rockefeller Chapel.
And the times?
The times for St. John Cantius is 4 p.m. on Sunday afternoon.
4 p.m. Sunday afternoon. That's my birthday. That'd be a good way to spend my birthday 6th, afternoon.
It would be a wonderful way to celebrate your birthday, Graz. And we can talk more about that off air. And then the next two Sundays are at 3 p.m. at Annunciation and Rockefeller.
How do you normally get the word out about these concerts? How do people hear about the work that you're doing?
Well, our website, of course. We do a lot of emailing. I know you've received my emails. We also advertise through parish bulletins. Many parishes are very, very helpful in that regard. We have a special, I'm sure you've heard, the Constant Contact email, where you can make your emails look very professional. And it's very gratifying to be on this program as well, because that does help to get the word out.
And what's the response that you get from people, particularly those who haven't been exposed to this kind of music before?
That's a really good question. When I experienced it as a Roman Catholic coming to the Byzantine Church, the only thing I can say is that it was one of the first times I ever experienced what it might be like to truly worship God as if I were face-to-face with God, because of the way the decor in the church is, the vestments, the processions of the church, the incense, the candles, and the music itself just underlies that whole experience.
You know, I like that image of singing as if you were face-to-face with God. I think maybe that is one of the critiques of the more contemporary repertoire, that it's more about us. And that it's more as if we're singing to and for one another.
I've had that experience, yeah.
But this music is very much void of that, and there's very much a sense of the other, and very much a vertical kind of relationship, that it's we lifting our hearts to God and offering God glory and praise.
And I think, Graz, that comes from the text itself, the text of the Eastern liturgies, written by John Chrysostom, St. Basil, and others. The text itself actually does that. That's what calls the music to be so profound and, in a sense, begging God for mercy because of that. It's a different facet, as John Paul II said. If you're looking at a jewel and you're looking at it from a particular direction, you get a different experience in the Eastern Church than you do in the West. The Roman Church also has beautiful traditions that I appreciate very much. But the Eastern Church, it's a different experience from a different wing of the house, if you will.
Yeah. I'm delighted that you're doing these concerts and helping people to get exposed to this music, because I think it's the opportunity to hear it that really wins people over.
It does. And that's why we also appreciate singing in the Roman liturgy, because I myself can't get enough of the entire Catholic Church, East and West.
Well, we're going to go out listening to some more music. I want to thank Timothy Woods and encourage all of you to take advantage of these concerts. We thank our producer, Mr. Jim Dish, and our engineer, Mr. Michael May. Have a wonderful and blessed weekend, and we'll see you the next time on the radio. I'm Graziano Marcheschi. God bless you all.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.